Denny held his arm as they turned to return to the encampment. Over the rushing rustle of the wind through the foliage came the intermittent squeaks of the natives, rousing from their siesta to prepare for the evening hunt. They walked in silence along the narrow trail. Chapter 58 Galactics. Krat licked slowly at her mating claw, studiously ignoring the creatures who scurried to clean up the bloody mess in the corner. They would be trouble over this. The Pelan High Council would protest. Of course, she was within her rights, as Grand Admiral, to deal with any member of the fleet as she saw fit. But that did not traditionally cover the skewering of a senior librarian, simply because he was the bearer of bad news. "I am getting old," she realized, "and the daughter I had hoped would soon be strong enough to pull me down is now dead. Who now will do me the honors before I grow erratic and become a hazard to the clan?" The small furry body was hauled away, and a sturdy paha mopped up the bloody mess. The other Pila looked at her. "Let them stare. When we capture the Earthlings, it won't matter. I shall be famous, and this incident will be ignored by all, especially the Pila. If we are the first ones to approach the progenitors with an offering, the law won't matter anymore. The Pila will not simply be our adult liege clients. They will be ours again, to meddle with, to redesign, to shape once more." "Back to work! All!" She snapped her mating claw. The twang sent the bridge crew scuttling off to their stations, some to repair the smoking damage from a near miss in the most recent battle with the Tandu. "Think now, Sorrow Mother. Can you spare ships to send once more to the planet, to that hellish volcano where every fleet has already sent a party to fight and die? There weren't supposed to be any Gubru left here, but a battered Gubru scout had shown up at the place where the distress call came from. It had gone to smoky ruin along with a Tandu destroyer. Prittle's ship, number 16, and two other vessels, even her battle computers could not identify. Perhaps one was a surviving spear ship of the Brothers of the Night, which had hidden on one of Kithrop's moons. Meanwhile, out here, the final battle with the Tandu's unholy alliance had turned into a bloody draw. The Sorrow still had a slim advantage, so the remaining Thenanin stayed by their Tandu allies. Should she risk all in the next encounter? For the Tandu to win would be horrible. They would, if they gained the power, destroy so many beautiful species that the Sorrow might someday own. If it came down to a choice, she guessed the Thenanin would switch sides one more time.
"Strategy section," she snapped.
"Fleet Mother?" A paha warrior approached, but stopped just out of arm reach. It eyed her cautiously. Given a chance, she would breed respect into the paha genes so deeply nothing would ever eradicate it. The paha stepped back involuntarily as her claw stretched.
"Find out which ships are now most expendable. Organize them into a small squadron. We're going to investigate the planet again."
The paha saluted and returned to its station quickly. Krat settled deeper into the Vlitor cushion. "We shall need a distraction," she thought. "Perhaps another expedition to that volcano would make the Thenanin nervous and let the Tandu think we know something." Of course, she reminded herself, the Tandu themselves may know what we do not. Chapter 59 Krydike. Far away, they call, the giants, the spirits of ocean, the leviathans. Krydike begins to understand. Does begin. The old gods are part figment, part racial memory, part ghost, and part something else. Something an engineer could never have allowed his ears to hear or eyes to see. Far away, they call. Leviathans. Not yet. Not yet. Not. Krydike has a duty to perform, yet does have a duty. No more. No more an engineer. But Krydike remains a spacer. Not useless. Krydike will do what he can do to help, can do to help save his crew, his ship. Chapter 60 Jillian. She wanted to rub her eyes, but the face mask was in the way. Too much remained to be done. The Finns came and went, swooping by her wherever she traveled in the ship, almost toppling her in their hurry to report and then be off again, carrying out orders. I hope Hikahi gets back soon. I'm not doing badly, I guess, but I'm no starship officer. She has the training to rule a crew. Hikahi doesn't even know she's captain, Jillian thought. Much as I pray they get the line open soon, I'll hate having to break that news to her. She wrote a brief message to Emerson Dionetti, and the last courier dashed off for the engine room. Wattasetti kept pace alongside her as she turned to swim into the outlook. There were two small crowds of dolphins in the bay, one at the forward sally hatch, and the other clustered about the longboat. The bow of the small spaceship almost touched the iris of one of the outer hatches. Its stern disappeared into a metal sheath beyond the rear end of the outlook. When the longboat is gone, this place will look pretty empty, she thought. A Finn in the party at the lock saw her and sped toward Jillian. He halted abruptly before her and hovered in the water at attention.
Flankers and scouts are ready to depart when you give the word, Jillian.
Thank you, Zaft. It will be soon. Is there still no word from the line repair party or from Kipiru?
No, sir. The courier you sent to follow Kipiru should be near the wreck shortly, though.
It was frustrating. Takana Jim had severed the link to the Thenanin wreck, and now it seemed impossible to find the break. For once, she cursed the fact that monofilaments could be hidden so well. For all they knew, some terrible disaster might have struck the work party at the very site where she was planning on moving Streaker. At least the detectors indicated the space battle was still going on, almost as fierce as ever. But what was keeping Tom? He was supposed to set off a message bomb when ETs showed up to investigate his ruse. But since the fake distress call, there had been nothing. In addition to everything else, the damn NIS machine wanted to talk to her. It had not set off the hidden alarm in her office to indicate that it was an emergency, but every time she used a comm unit, she heard a faint click that signaled the thing's desire to talk. It was enough to make a femme just want to climb into bed and stay there. A sudden commotion broke out near the lock. The wall speaker let out a brief, sloppy squeal of trinary, followed by a longer report in loose, high-pitched Anglic.
Sir!
Zoft turned excitedly.
They report.
I heard.
She nodded.
The line's been repaired. Congratulate the repair team for me, and get them inside for a couple of hours' rest. Then please ask Herkapete to contact Hikahi right away. He's to ascertain her situation and tell her we begin moving the ship at 2100 hours unless she objects. I'll be calling her shortly.
Aye, sir.
Zoft whirled and sped off. Wattasetti watched her silently, waiting.
All right, she said. Let's see Takata Jim and Metz off. You've made certain the crew has offloaded anything not on our checklist and inspected everything the exiles took aboard?
Yes. They haven't even got a flare gun, no radio, and no more fuel than the minimum needed to reach the island.